Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler. Always great to join you at the end of the week to play that game of catch-up, find out what madness has befallen their great nation and their people. And unfortunately, there's never a shortage of material, never a shortage of, as my parents would have said, grist for the mill. A lot of stuff happening, but for those of you new to my program, I welcome you. I want to just give you a thumbnail sketch about who I am and why I am here. I am a retired senior special agent of what used to be the Immigration and Naturalization Service, a vital mission that involves national security, public safety. It engenders all of the issues of the day, and while so many journalists, so-called, and so many others with an agenda would have you believe immigration is a single issue, the reality is it's a singular issue, and by failing to secure the borders, effectively enforce and administer our immigration laws, we are undermining national security, public safety, public health, the welfare, well-being, and survival of America's middle class. Goodness, you can't imagine a more essential issue than the issue of border security, especially in an era where we keep on hearing about increased threats of terrorism, where we are experiencing a huge influx in criminal aliens and narcotics. How in the world do you defend a country with a wide-open border and millions of people living in towns and cities whose true identities and purposes for coming here are unknown and unknowable? And remarkably, the American people have been deceived, and they've gone along with it out of a fear of being criticized, out of a fear of being criticized. This is absolute foolishness, and this isn't a conservative issue. This is an American issue. It's not about right or wrong, right or left, but about right or wrong. I have two websites I obviously always like to remind you folks about. My own personal website, Michael Cutler, one word, C-U-T-L-E-R, michaelcutler.net. CAPSWeb.org is an organization that I write for. Their website, CAPSWeb.org, stands for Californians for Population Stabilization. They have been, for the longest time, hammering this issue about the failures to secure the borders, this human tsunami of supposed children coming across the border. And I say supposed children because not everybody coming here is an infant. It's about manipulating the facts. Certainly there are a lot of unaccompanied minors. We're certainly creating a crisis and a nightmare for them and their families. But we have been attracting them across our country. And when I say we, I mean the politicians of this country. And it's both sides of the aisle. Let's not mince words. Of course, the Obama administration has been an abomination, if you will, telling these folks that the president doesn't need Congress, that he's going to act unilaterally, and he has repeatedly. Incredibly, those of you who may not know this, the Supreme Court yesterday ruled that his so-called recess appointments that weren't really recess appointments violated the Constitution. Tushinal professor who occupies the Oval Office, who promised us the most transparent government, needs a bottle of window cleaner. Hardly transparent. More and more revelations, whether it's about the IRS targeting conservatives, Tea Partiers. Most recently, it would appear, Senator Grassley, my gosh, that takes my breath away. He is virtually an institution in the United States Senate, one of the most senior members of the Senate, now apparently coming under the scrutiny of the IRS. You know, this is stuff that just a few years ago couldn't have been made into a film, even if the late, great Tom Clancy wrote it. It now passes for the day-to-day headlines of this great nation. And it's got to really stop. And it's remarkable, because it's so rare to see the Supreme Court unanimous in its voting and its decisions, unanimously said the president violated the Constitution of the United States, including Sotomayor, who he appointed. I mean, think about that. The president of the United States, constitutional law professor, violated the Constitution, according to every member of the United States Supreme Court. This is not inconsequential. Not inconsequential. It was a how dare you moment. You know, interesting aside, and then I'll get back to the main topic, but as I say these things, I want you to understand what runs through my mind. One of the defenses that a criminal attorney may use to defend a client is that the client was entrapped, didn't know better, committed a violation of law because the law enforcement agent or agencies convinced the person to commit a crime and then arrested them for that crime. The classic example is the cop who convinces a young lady to become a prostitute. She wasn't a prostitute to start with. He convinces her to have sex with a couple of his friends for money and then busts her for prostitution. And they argue, and very often successfully, hey, wait a second. This young lady was working as a secretary, never was involved in prostitution. She's never been arrested. Suddenly this happens, and the guy who convinces her to turn some tricks, if you will, is the guy with the badge who arrests her. That's entrapment. This wasn't something that the person was predisposed to do until the law enforcement officer came along and planted the bug in that person's head and said, hey, here's a great way to make a couple of quick bucks. And so she does it and now finds herself in handcuffs. I would argue that that is truly a great example of entrapment. But when you look at decisions about the entrapment defense, people in law enforcement and judges and lawyers have a much more difficult time successfully arguing entrapment because the presumption is that people in law enforcement and attorneys and judges and so forth understand the law so well that they could not be duped into violating the law because they knew they were violating the law. They certainly weren't unwitting and they certainly weren't ignorant. Obama was a constitutional law professor. So for a constitutional law professor to turn around and violate the Constitution, I would submit that he knew damn well what he was doing. And I'm disgusted with this constant nonsense of trying to coerce out of the Congress what he wants, the bullying strong-arm tactics. You know, America has a thing about bullies, and one day we'll get into my thoughts about that. But gosh, if this isn't the bullying tactic, and of course his number one cheerleader in chief, not Joe Biden, the court jester, if you will, but Chuck Schumer. Chuck Schumer's there saying, yeah, go get him, go get him. And what does he want to go get him? He has told the Congress, you either give me comprehensive reform or I will act unilaterally. Well, Mr. President, where in the Constitution does it say that there is a time limit on Congress to pass bad legislation and that the president, under the Constitution, can then turn around and say, well, you know what? You ran out the clock, so now it's my time. That is about as unconstitutional as it gets. I would argue it's even more unconstitutional than his supposed recess appointments. It is a thug bullying tactic, and it's despicable. He knows better, and it infuriates me because I will tell you something, folks. I spent 30 years of my career as an immigration agent, and not long ago I had a discussion with a member of Congress who said to me, let me tell you how immigration works because I was an immigration lawyer. I find that pretty interesting, that an immigration lawyer would tell an agent with 30 years of experience and about as diverse a background as you could imagine how the immigration system works. I guarantee you I've probably arrested more illegal aliens than this guy had clients. And I spent half my career with the Drug Task Force. I had the distinct privilege of putting handcuffs on suspected terrorists. So when some attorney waggles his finger at me and says, well, I was an immigration lawyer. I'm underwhelmed. Those immigration laws are our first and last line of defense against criminals, terrorists, spies, human rights violators, war criminals, aliens with dangerous diseases, aliens who are mentally ill and violent, aliens who would become a public charge, and aliens who would take the jobs Americans desperately need. And then you watch the pablum being dished out daily on the news broadcast, and I don't care what network. Then there's always some yo-yo who will come on and say, well, you know what? We need to enact comprehensive reform. It's good for the economy. Whose economy? The American who's losing his or her job and losing his or her home to foreclosure? The American who used to be a middle-class tax-paying consumer who can't afford the luxury of three meals a day, who has to make a decision about whether to pay the rent or pay a medical bill? Is that the people we're talking about? Are they going to benefit by dumping millions of more authorized workers into a labor pool that can't find work now? And the U.S. economy, really? Right now, every year, at least $125 billion gets wired out of the United States economy by foreign workers, both legal and illegal. And if you go to the UN website, you go to the World Bank website, it's right up there that they anticipate if this country is crooked and stupid enough to pass comprehensive reform, of course they don't describe it that way, because the UN wants to see the American economy looted for the benefit of the third world. And they tell you right up front that one of the best ways to get more money to flow from the United States to the third world is to enact comprehensive reform. Talk about taking from Peter to pay Paul, or robbing, more appropriately, from Peter to pay Paul. The whole idea behind the economic stimulus package, if you remember that, folks, was to run up our deficit, money into the economy, so that Americans would spend money, which would stimulate the creation of jobs, increase incomes, and raise the boat. When money is wired out of the economy, we don't only lose the money itself, which is bad enough, but there's something that economists refer to as a multiplier effect. What the multiplier effect is this concept that every time you put money into the economy, just as the economic stimulus package said, it will encourage more business. Pardon me. The carpenter who builds a house gets a paycheck. He goes out and buys a pair of shoes. The guy that sells him the pair of shoes takes his paycheck and makes a down payment on a car. And so it goes. The money moves through the economy. It is estimated that every dollar that's pumped into the economy ultimately generates another $3 of business that year. It's a factor of three. So if it's $125 billion that gets wired out, and that's the visible money, God knows how much money moves invisibly, it has the functional impact of nearly $400 billion in deficits being run up. And now if it's a higher number, and I've seen estimates go to $200 billion, we're talking over $500 billion a year in deficits being run up effectively by money leaving our economy because of foreign workers working in the United States. And that's before we look at the wage suppression of American workers. That's before we look at the Americans who lose their jobs, and when they lose their jobs and lose their homes and drive down the price of housing, and they also stop being consumers because they lose their disposable income when they are unemployed. I can't even imagine the impact, and that's before we talk about the impact of crime. And not to say that everybody who comes here is a criminal, but let's remember that we have an inspections process that's supposed to keep out criminals and terrorists and drug dealers and all that stuff. So if we have criminals coming into the country, we run up a huge bill where criminal justice is concerned. When people are injured, we're talking about violent crime. These are people who stop being productive. Maybe they need medical care. Their family starts losing money. So all of this exerts downward pressure on the economy. But yet nobody ever challenges anybody who gets on TV or radio and says, oh, comprehensive reform would generate money for the economy. No, it wouldn't. That's a big, fat lie. But you don't hear anybody ever oppose them. Nobody ever says, how would it help? So, you know, it's the old idea, the big lie. You keep telling a lie, and sooner or later, people start to begin that the lie is truth, or believe that the lie is truth. It's a lie. It's an absolute lie to think that providing foreign workers with work in America will help American workers. And by the way, for the politicians out there that buy into this BS or lie through their teeth, think of what they do to their competition in the primaries. They eviscerate each other. So many of these nitwits that go into government, and not all, and there's some really decent people in politics. But more and more we're seeing a bunch of bozos getting into politics, people that maybe couldn't get a job anywhere else. I don't know. But you have people who I think are real heroes, people like Jeff Sessions and Chuck Grassley. You know, Grassley supported the first amnesty of 86 and then had the integrity and the decency to turn around and say, you know, I made a mistake. When was the last time you saw a politician possess and demonstrate the integrity stand up and say, you know, I made a mistake? About 8 years ago, I testified at a field hearing before the House Judiciary Committee in Dubuque, Iowa. And seated next to me was none other than Chuck Grassley. It was a hearing about comprehensive reform. And Senator Grassley was very clear and said, you know, I supported the amnesty of 86 and they made a big mistake. I almost fell out of my chair. We are not used to hearing politicians say that. There was no hidden agenda. He didn't say, I made a mistake, but, and then come up with some other nonsense. It was unequivocal. It was crystal clear. It was driven by the truth and this man's moral decency. So, of course, he is now being potentially investigated by the IRS. Wow. It blows my mind. In fact, Chuck Grassley called upon me last year to testify before the Senate Judiciary Committee, and, of course, I was honored to do so. So he's a good guy. Senator Jeff Sessions, another great guy. Steve King of Iowa, another man who has real integrity. Real integrity. I don't agree with Steve on every issue. He is a conservative Republican. I am a Democrat from Brooklyn. Do we disagree? Yes, we do. Should we? Absolutely. Does that make Steve King my opponent? No, it doesn't. You see, what we've lost in America, and this really upsets me, and it's one of the reasons that I've been motivated to do this program, we've lost the ability as Americans to respectfully, and I underline with big red marking pen, respectfully disagree with each other. The founding fathers in their brilliance and putting this government together and putting this nation together in the very First Amendment, and when you ask people about the First Amendment, they'll rattle it right off. Freedom of press, freedom of speech, freedom of religion. Okay. And sometimes I like to have a little fun, and I'll say to people, hey, do you know about the other two things? What other two things? So they know by rote, press, freedom of religion, and so forth. And I'll say to them, do you know it talks about the right to seek redress of grievances? And they kind of look at you and go, oh. And it also talks about the right for peaceable assemblage. Well, why on earth do you think the founding fathers, right there in the First Amendment, the most important amendment, said, as an American, you have the right guaranteed by law in this country, by our Constitution, to have a confrontation, if you will, as long as it's peaceable. Because the democratic process requires debate, discourse, and discussion. And I am sick and tired and fed up with the vilification of Americans by other Americans, and we see it on both sides of the aisle. We see it, and it's got to stop. Play nice, you know? When people on the right look down their nose and say, oh, so-and-so is a progressive, you would think he's describing a baby killer, a child molester, something awful. Okay, I understand that we see things differently. We have different political perspectives. And so what? We're stronger than that. If we're that fragile that somebody disagreeing with us can destroy the country, we've got a serious problem. You know, and on the other hand, you've got the Democrats looking down their nose at the Tea Party. Oh, those people are crazy. They're not crazy. They're Americans with perhaps a different perspective. And I got to tell you something about the Tea Party. There's a bunch of great people, Joe Dugan and Lauren Martell, and a bunch of folks in South Carolina who for the last 3 years have invited me at their expense to come down to South Carolina, or at least two of those were at their expense, or at Joe Dugan's expense, the Tea Party expense, to come down and spear convention at the Spring Maid Resort in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. And they gave me prime time. They had me speak right after the presidential candidate spoke the first time 3 years ago. Last year I was there. You go to my website, michaelcutler.net or capsweb.org. They have it posted, the video of the 20-minute or 25-minute presentation that I made. And I spoke right after the members of Congress did, prime time. Every seat was taken in the hall. And everybody there knows I'm registered as a Democrat, but I vote as an American. I don't care if you're with the Hopping Kangaroo Party. I'm more concerned with whether you stand for America and Americans than where you are in the usual dividing issues. This divide-and-conquer strategy is working, folks. I don't know any sensible American of any political orientation who wants to see, God forbid, another terrorist attack in the United States, who wants to get a phone call that a neighbor was killed by a drunk driver or by a transnational drug trafficker or thug. I don't know anybody who wants to lose his or her home to foreclosure or to wind up sending their kids to school, have student loan payments that look more like mortgage payments, and then come to find out that there's no work for their child who spent all this time, money, and effort getting a degree and then can't find a job. This is what immigration's about. We are finding diseases springing up across the United States that we thought we had vanquished, polio and resistant tuberculosis. Respiratory illnesses coming out of the Middle East. You know, Ellis Island was a quarantine station. Barbara Jordan, who was a very liberal Democrat member of Congress, came up with what was known as the Jordan Commission Report nearly 20 years ago, and her position on immigration would match that of the staunchest conservatives. And then you've got conservatives who have gone the wrong way on a one-way street, people like Ted Cruz, who somehow thinks that America needs to double legal immigration, including family-based immigration, and wants a 500% increase in the number of H-1B visas. Ted Cruz is going the wrong way on a one-way street, and he's standing on the gas pedal, and most people would say he's a conservative. But he's certainly not pro-American. When some politician can stand up at the bully pulpit or the microphone at an event and say that for America to do better, we need to import 325,000 of the best and brightest from around the world. We're not talking about extraordinary people when we're talking about 325,000. When we talk about people like Albert Einstein, you know, people who came here from other countries and are truly extraordinary, I'm all for it. The guy who founded PayPal and SpaceX, his name has slipped my mind at the moment. It will come to me. You look at those folks, and he's an immigrant. Well, the system worked, and he was admitted into the United States, and that's fine. He should be here. Elon Musk, by the way, is that gentleman's name. Elon Musk came to the United States from South Africa via Canada. Do I think we should have admitted him? Absolutely, positively. You know, I don't care what country you come from, as long as your being here doesn't pose a threat to the well-being of America or Americans. Elon Musk is amazing. I'm thrilled that we admitted him, and the system did work in his case, and it's worked in other cases. But when you talk about admitting hundreds of thousands of engineers and say that they're all extraordinary, your nose is growing, and we're not that stupid. By and large, I thought that when we spoke about the world's best and brightest, there was one word to describe them. Ladies and gentlemen, I thought we called them Americans. It was Americans who built the Panama Canal. It was Americans who developed the atom bomb during the Second World War. It was Americans who built the X-1 rocket plane that Chuck Yeager used to fly faster than the speed of sound back in October of 1947. And it was Americans who went to the moon. How in the world do you have politicians standing on a stage and talking about the fact that America won't be able to continue to succeed unless we bring in the best and brightest? And what does that make us, chopped liver? We've become Rodney Dangerfield in our own country. We get no respect from the people that we elect to represent us. What kind of representation is that? So maybe when we elect clowns like that, there's a case that could be made that we're pretty damn stupid. Maybe that's what this is about. Look who we've elected. When people can stand up on stage and say, well, Americans are so dumb. It's the old Johnny Carson routine he did with Ed McMahon, and the answer is, how dumb are we? Well, we elect people that insult the hell out of us and tell us that for America to do better, we got to replace American workers with foreign workers. That's how dumb we are. That's how gutless we are, that we don't have the guts to stand up and say, what in the world are you talking about? I'm the son of an immigrant. My mother came here ahead of the Holocaust. I was named for my grandmother who died in the Holocaust. Should we give political asylum to people who are at risk? Absolutely. Are we at our best when we help those who are in trouble? Absolutely. But political asylum is now being used as a weapon against us by terrorists. In 93, a guy by the name of Mir Amil Kansi shot up the CIA, citizen of Pakistan, applied for political asylum, lied through his teeth, and repaid America's generosity by killing two CIA officers and wounding three others. And then he fled the country. 1 month later, Ramzi Youssef also got political asylum, and he was instrumental in planting a bomb in the garage of the Trade Center that killed six, injured over 1,000, inflicted $500 million in damage on the World Trade Center complex, and damn near brought one of the buildings down sideways, and I don't want to imagine what the casualty rate would have been had he succeeded. So should we end political asylum? Absolutely not. Should we stop people from legally immigrating to America? Absolutely not. But the system has to have integrity. Because by not having integrity, we wind up giving the keys to the front door of this nation, the visas and citizenship and so forth, people who don't wish us well, people who at the end of the day would do great harm to us. The 9/11 Commission staff report, in fact, was written by the staff of the 9/11 Commission. Makes sense. The 9/11 Commission had a bunch of attorneys and a bunch of immigration agents and other agents, FBI agents and so forth, working with them to do the investigative work and write the reports and make the recommendations. And, you know, if you want to see a politician turn purple, here's the question that you really need to ask the politician. You need to ask the politician who advocates for comprehensive reform, why are you ignoring the 9/11 Commission report? Very simple. We're being told that ISIS is trying to take down all of Iraq to create a base from which it can launch terror attacks in the United States. In order to launch an attack in the United States, to come here, they have to come here. In fact, let me read the preface of the 9/11 Commission staff report on terrorist travel. It is perhaps obvious to state that terrorists cannot plan and carry out attacks in the United States if they are unable to enter the country. Yet prior to September 11, while there were efforts to enhance border security, no agency of the U.S. government thought of border security as a tool in the counterterrorism arsenal. Indeed, even after 19 hijackers demonstrated the relative ease of obtaining a U.S. visa and gaining admission into the United States, border security still is not considered a cornerstone of national security policy. We believe, for reasons we discuss in the following pages, that it must be made one. So think about that. They talk about the visa process, that we have to be more careful who we give visas to. On 9/11, there were 26 visa waiver countries. Guess how many visa waiver countries there are today? Chile became the 38th a couple of months ago. If the 9/11 Commission said that you're making it too easy for terrorists to get visas, why in the world didn't they end the visa waiver program altogether? Why in the world did it take George W. Bush almost a full year after 9/11 to end the transit without visa program? Because the Chamber of Commerce in Washington, the National Chamber of Commerce, there are some decent local chambers of commerce. There's one in Pennsylvania. I've been on their program a few times. They're good. So it's not just the chamber. It's the national chamber. And so, you know, when you think about people talking about liberals and immigration, the Chamber of Commerce in Washington was the enemy of Ralph Nader. If you read what happened to Ralph Nader, it was the Chamber of Commerce that went after him. They really didn't care about anything except the profits of the corporations. That's all they care about. They know the price of everything and the value of nothing. So the Chamber of Commerce created something known as the Discover America Partnership. And the joke that I always have when I'm out there, and in fact I'm going to be in California come July 11th with Act for America in Corona. I guess it's outside Los Angeles. So I love doing these events. But the point of the matter is that the Chamber of Commerce wants everybody to get on the airplanes and come to America, spend their money, fill the hotels, fill the scenic attractions, and so forth. A long time ago, a council over the Immigration Subcommittee said, Mike, look at it this way. The travel industry want the wealthy people to get on those airplanes and fly to America. They want the wealthy foreign visitors to go to those fancy hotels and sleep on the sheets that are changed by illegal alien workers. It's all about dollars and cents. So they have this Discover America partnership, but perhaps they've forgotten, as I've pointed out in the past, that Al-Qaeda has discovered America. They've partnered with the hotel, hospitality industries, the manufacturing associations. Doesn't it give you a great feeling of warmth and comfort knowing that the people responsible for room service are making national security decisions for the United States? It's astonishing. It's astonishing. And I started to talk about how giving people lawful status is dangerous. You know, well, if someone's been here 12 years, we should give them a green card. Okay, and how do you know how long an illegal alien has been here if he's run the border? There's no record created of entry. You know, you don't run the guy's fingerprints and it spits out a sheet that says, oh, yeah, Joe Smith from wherever, Amsterdam, entered the United States on January 15th of 2004, and there it is. You have no idea. And most illegal aliens use phony ID. So, of course, Mayor de Blasio in New York said, hey, these undocumented people need documents. I'll give them documents. So now, starting, I think, today, our idiot mayor is giving illegal aliens identity documents. Of course, I wonder how he verifies, number one, what their name is, and that, number two, that they're even illegal aliens. Supposing they're American fugitives looking for new ID so they can hide themselves. You know, when you think of people getting arrested, you think of the cop or the federal agent doing a couple of things as part of the arrest process. But do you not agree that when you talk about the arrest, you think about handcuffs, and then you think about photographs, and then you think about fingerprinting? Why do you think we fingerprint people that are taken into custody? I mean, this isn't about finger painting, folks. It's fingerprinting. It's a way of identifying them, and now we're using more sophisticated methods involving iris scans and retina scans and DNA because we know we've caught a fish when we handcuff somebody. In law enforcement, the question is, what fish did you get? We know that bad guys lie about their names. They lie about their date of birth. They lie about their country of citizenship. So when you give an illegal alien an identity document, you're giving them a cloaking device. You're giving them a mask to wear to conceal their true identity. The 9/11 Commission was so clear about it. And yet it's so funny because the other side, the immigration anarchists, turn around and they say, well, these people are undocumented. Well, they are, and that means that they either don't have an official identity document, so identifying them is very problematic, or it may mean that they do have an official identity document, but they are either concealing it or they've destroyed it, because they know that their actual name is on terror watch lists or that they're fugitives. This is dangerous to be undocumented. But they use the word undocumented to distract people from another issue. They're uninspected. They snuck in. They didn't go through the front door where the inspector, and I did this job for 4 years. See, I don't speak from conjecture. I speak from the real world experience. Those inspectors are supposed to keep criminals and terrorists and spies and aliens with dangerous diseases out of the country. So when someone sneaks in, they're concealing something, and you don't know what they're concealing. It may just be that they're coming to work and they're poor, and because they're poor, they can never have gotten a visa. Or it could be that they're part of a criminal or terrorist organization. It could be that they're coming here to kill people. And we have no idea. And here's what's in the 9/11 Commission staff report on terrorist travel. This is on page 47. And you can get that online, this document, or you can go to my website. You can see the links to all this stuff, or you can go to capsweb.org, and I wish you would. And here's what it says. Once terrorists had entered the United States, their next challenge was to find a way to remain here. Their primary method was immigration fraud. For example, Yusuf and Ajaj concocted bogus political asylum stories when they arrived in the United States. This is exactly what we're talking about, isn't it? And then it goes on and says, Mahmoud Abu Olima, involved in both the World Trade Center and landmark plots, received temporary residence under the Seasonal Agriculture Workers Program after falsely claiming he picked beans in Florida. So he lied and got away with it. The only reason they found out that he lied was after the attack. When they started to do the investigation, they discovered he lied. But the lie wasn't uncovered soon enough for the people who were killed or injured on the 93 attack. After the fact, closing the door. And now we won't even close the door. But when you get to page 98, under the title of Immigration Benefits, I mean, boy, oh boy, this lays it out so crystal clear. There is absolutely no room for debate or discussion about what it means. Listen to this. Terrorists in the 1990s, as well as the September 11th hijackers, needed to find a way to stay in or embed themselves in the United States if their operational plans were to come to fruition. As already discussed, this could be accomplished legally by marrying an American citizen, achieving temporary worker status, or applying for asylum after entering. In many cases, the act of filing for an immigration benefit sufficed to permit the alien to remain in the country until the petition was adjudicated. Terrorists were free to conduct surveillance, coordinate operations, obtain and receive funding, go to school and learn English, make contacts in the United States, acquire necessary materials, and execute an attack. So, I mean, it lays it out. So they come up with the DREAM Act. The president says, oh, this is about children, young people, young kids. He used all those words. The age cutoff is 31. But they know that Americans have a soft spot for children. Many countries look at children as a source of untapped labor. They have laws, or don't have laws, I should say, to protect children. Here we do. There are many countries where young girls work in brothels. They're not supposed to in this country, and if you're caught doing it, you go away for a very long time, and you should. I think that anybody who gets a child involved in the sex trade, kiddie porn, whatever, should have plastic surgery to remove certain body parts, and then we should give them free room and board for a very long time. But why in the world is Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, spending so much resources on those issues and ignoring the border? It's about have those agents do everything and anything you can, make sure that we leave the border wide open. So now we have this massive onslaught of minors heading for the border. We're being told it's a humanitarian crisis. But why are the people coming? They're coming because the president has promised that he will not deport them. There will be no negative consequences. No negative consequences. And even the Republicans are saying, well, we're not going to give them citizenship, but we can't deport them all. We can't deport 11 million, so we need to keep them here. Wow. So if the argument is that 11 million is too big a number, what happens when people find out it's 30 million and when you realize that God knows how many more thousands are coming every single day? So every day more aliens come here gives more credence to the false argument being used by the Republicans. It's hopeless. We're going to take down our borders. Why bother? Hey, there's an idea, folks. Why don't we just get rid of the Border Patrol? Why don't we get rid of those inspectors at the airports? Think how much money we spend on their salaries, on running those facilities. Let's have a free-for-all. Well, we're pretty close to a free-for-all right now with this president in the White House. And something funny happened yesterday. I was driving my car, and I had the radio on, Congressman Peter King, and I like Peter. I've met with him. He used to chair Homeland Security. I sometimes may disagree with him a little bit, but by and large, he gets it. He really does. But he was joined by, of all people, Steve Israel, another congressman from Long Island out here in New York. And Peter King was adamant about why the movement of these illegal aliens from the border to New York, to Long Island, on a waste cleanup site, according to what Peter King was describing, is outrageous, and he's right. Lo and behold, The commentator said that Steve Israel joined Peter King in saying you must not send these kids to New York. Steve Israel, as part of the Democrat minority in Congress, in the House of Representatives, has been an advocate for legalizing unknown millions of illegal aliens, has been an advocate for the DREAM Act, has been providing every possible incentive by those statements for these people to come here. And where did he think they were going to stay? Down on the border? You know, this is a classic example of NIMBY, not in my backyard. You know, NIMBY. Unbelievable. See, when I listen to this nonsense, oh, we have to help these people, do I feel bad for illegal aliens who are struggling? Of course I do. As a new agent in particular, I used to raid the factories. It sickened me to see the working conditions these people were subjected to. I raided onion farms in upstate New York. In fact, I broke my ankle one day falling into an irrigation ditch that was about 7 feet deep. Been there, done that. And you feel bad for these folks, but we can't bring the whole world here. There are more than 7 billion people inhabiting planet Earth. More than half live well below anything that we would consider the poverty line. So should we bring a couple of billion people to the United States? Can we afford this? You know, America's like a lifeboat. You put too many people on the lifeboat, it capsizes and everyone goes down. That's where we are now. This country's headed down, not up. And the world depends on America's leadership that's been so lacking. And you see the chaos around the world because we do now lack the leadership and the resources and the commitment. So we've weakened America, but you know, you have to understand when we hear these statements from the politicians, it makes me think of that 20-year-old good-looking blonde or whatever. It doesn't have to be a blonde. I'm not going to be stereotypical. And they ask these beauty queens, and it's really funny, the movie Erin Brockovich, which I just love the movie. Julia Roberts talks about being a beauty queen, and she said that her platform was to, I think, end world poverty, world hunger. Well, everybody wants to end world hunger and world poverty. A lot of the terrorism is directly related to poverty and keeping people ignorant and keeping people at each other's throats so that they're busy fighting and killing each other so that the corrupt leaders at the top of the food chain get what they want because the other people are distracted fighting for survival. Almost sounds like America heading in that direction these days if we're not careful. But all these beauty queens stand up there and with this, you know, wide-eyed look of innocence say, I want to end world poverty. Okay, that's cool. Me too. So you have politicians saying, we have to take care of the poor. And what they neglect is that increasingly we can find the poor right here in our own country, and they're our fellow Americans. Since when is it less compassionate to be concerned about a starving American child than a child starving on another continent half a world away? Why are our children disposable somehow? Why are American minority kids to be ignored? Why is that acceptable? This isn't about racism. And when they use the charge, they, the open borders crowd, what do? They shut down discussion because most people are decent. Most people don't want to have that debate. Most people don't want to be accused of being racist because they aren't. They're decent. But those words are designed to shut people up. It's the slam dunk. It's the kick to the groin, you know? And so the other side engages in that tactic to shut off conversation so that nobody gets to the real issue. That trick doesn't work with me, and it shouldn't work with you, and we've got to learn to grow a spine or grow a pair or however you want to put it. It's time for some cojones here, folks. We've got to be able to look those characters in the eye and say, no, that's not going to work anymore. We're not going to let you play that card anymore. I did a debate a couple of months ago on a college campus on the island, Long Island here in New York, and this female professor, as we got into this discussion about how difficult it is to vet aliens from other countries, and I explained that certain countries in the third world either don't have the resources or corrupt, or we went through all the possibilities and how difficult it can be. In some countries, we can't even send their citizens home. They refuse to acknowledge that the criminal, a sociopath, is a citizen of their country. So they won't issue a travel document, so we can't move them, and we're stuck with them. And her immediate thing was to say, your problem, Mr. Cutler, is you're Eurocentric. Of course, she was from Peru, not Europe. And most people didn't even initially pick up on the racism inherent in that statement. But I certainly picked up on it, and I let her have both barrels. And people afterwards, the professors and the lawyers, and I suspect some of them were quote-unquote liberal, came up to me and said, wow, that was refreshing. And I said, for far too long, we have become the country where we are expected to apologize that if someone throws a punch at us, we're supposed to say, I'm sorry that I let my nose get in the way of your fist. Is it racist to be concerned that American children, especially American minority kids, are living in poverty with no hope of ever climbing out of that hole unless they become criminals, and then their life expectancy is how long? And along the way, how many more people will die? You know, when you're living in poverty and you have nobody supporting you and no way of getting to school, the challenges can be insurmountable, Our government is supposed to stand with its own citizens, just the way that parents are supposed to stand with their own children. There is nothing more honorable and decent and moral than giving money to charity, but not if your own children are going to bed hungry at night, folks. And it's estimated that 1 in 5 American children now go to bed hungry at night. So are we in the position to be writing those checks to take care of children starving around the world when our own kids are starving, when our own kids are falling victim to drugs? If you want to know if the border is secure, ignore those BS arrest statistics from the Border Patrol. DHS is truly the Department of Homeland Surrender. When those journalists can stand in front of the cameras and announce unemployment stands at 6.3%, knowing full damn well that they're not counting 100 million working-age Americans who've given up looking for work, who've exhausted their unemployment benefits. What in the world does that 6.3% statistic mean anyway? But we hear this BS all the time, and nobody challenges it. It's time we started to challenge it. It's gotten bad enough that nobody can ignore it anymore, folks. If you want to know the real metric about border security, you look at narcotics. You look at the price and availability of heroin and cocaine. We do not produce a gram of those substances inside this country. Every single molecule of heroin and cocaine in the United States was smuggled past our borders. And this was part of what I wrote about in my articles for Front Page Magazine, the David Horowitz Freedom Center publication. So what are we doing now? We have our Border Patrol agents providing concierge service and babysitting service to illegal aliens instead of being out there on the line protecting us. They are the thin green line, and that's why my most recent article for that magazine is called The Thinning of the Thin Green Line. You know, the blue line is the line that we always associate with law enforcement, the police, separating the citizenry from criminals. Well, along the border, the Border Patrol is known as the green machine because of the green uniforms, the thin green line. And we're purposely, it would seem, this administration thinning that line, allowing the flood of narcotics into America. You have Mayor de Blasio providing identity documents to illegal aliens and his predecessor, Bloomberg. I used to call him Bumberg, the guy who somehow thought it was appropriate to have a cocktail party at what, for all intents and purposes, was the mausoleum at Ground Zero. It's both sides of the aisle. These folks are not on our side. And Bloomberg standing there and ranted and raved. And what was he ranting and raving about? He was ranting and raving about big gulp drinks, which the courts, by the way, finally knocked down that foolishness. I think we should eat healthy. But when I have to get the government to approve the size drink I'm allowed to drink, what country am I living in? What country? Life, liberty, and the pursuit of what? Big gulp drinks? You know, I had visions of big gulp drinks marching down the street like an invading army. But what's so remarkable with all of his ranting and raving about salt and sugar, not a word about heroin or cocaine. Not a word. Got to wonder why. I mean, I have no idea what's in Bloomberg's head. I sometimes think he flunks the wiggle test. If you want to know what the wiggle test is, you stick your left finger in your left ear, your right finger in your right ear, and you wiggle your fingertips. If they touch, you flunk. But maybe it's not stupidity. Maybe it's because drug money so permeates real estate and the banking industry, high-end auto sales and high-end jewelry, that if you took drug money out of the economy, those industries would implode like a black hole. Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. I'd like him to explain how he could rant and rave about salt and sugar but ignore heroin and cocaine. But I'm not holding my breath for his explanation. But, you know, there's another issue, too. Because Bloomberg, with all of his rantings and ravings, also went after the Bronx district attorney for not prosecuting people who trespassed into public housing. And he made some statements to the effect that the people who live in public housing want the cops to stop people who are trespassing and ask them, who are you and why are you here? And when I saw that quote in the paper, I was transported mystically back to the early 70s when I sat in a booth at Kennedy Airport. And essentially, those were the questions that we were supposed to arriving foreign visitors. Who are you? Why are you here? And how long do you plan to stay? Basically, he was describing the inspections process that illegal aliens evade. And he said, well, if you have trespassers, then you're going to have crime. You have got to go after the trespassers. And he's right. But when people trespassed on America, he wanted to give them the key to the city. Now, why is that? Why is that? We now have a Marine sitting in a jail cell in Mexico. He's been sitting there since March 31st, if I remember correctly. Well, today, Breitbart News and then CNN News reported, and this is mind-boggling to me, how a Mexican law enforcement helicopter crossed the border and fired shots in the direction of our Border Patrol agents. And I have to tell you, this is startling. The Marine who was arrested by the Mexicans and not released, and they've been moving him around like a chess piece from jail to jail, unbelievable. The guy just came back from serving overseas, and I'd love to know what John Kerry is doing about it, or Joe Biden, vice president extraordinaire. But here's the Breitbart headline. Houston, Texas, Breitbart. Texas has confirmed that on Thursday morning, a Mexican military helicopter flew into the U.S. and shot at Border Patrol agents. You think they're going to go to jail? The Marine who was arrested just came back from a tour in the Middle East. He was suffering post-traumatic stress. He had his possessions in his car. He got stuck on a road where he couldn't turn around, was forced to go into Mexico because he was living in Southern California, called 911 to report that he had weapons in the trunk. They were authorized for him to carry. He had all the paperwork. It was perfectly legit for him to have those weapons. And they couldn't tell him what to do. I mean, there was just no way getting off the road. It was like getting on one of those roads that say, you know, bridge ahead, you can't turn around. As soon as he got into Mexico, he told the Mexican customs officials, look, I'm an American, I'm a GI, I have three guns in my car, I have all the paperwork, all I want to do is go back to the United States, I'm here by mistake. Can I just please turn around and go home? They took him, they seized his car, they seized his weapons. He has now been sitting in jail for 3 months. 3 months. Because he went the wrong way on a street. Missed a turn. It was at night. He was tired. And instead of saying, go home, I could even see it if they took the guns from him. And that would have been, in my view, extreme. This was an honest mistake. They didn't find the weapons. And then he said, oh, by the way, here's the paperwork. As soon as he got into that booth, he said to the officials, I made a terrible mistake. I'm sorry. Does that sound like somebody who should be arrested? And these are our allies. And if you believe that story, I've got a fence to sell you. So that Marine sits in jail, but meanwhile our Border Patrol agents are being fired upon by Mexican law enforcement, flying their helicopter over American airspace. But that was just a mistake. And where's Obama? Nowhere to be seen. And I keep watching the unfolding nonsense with the IRS, and I have to tell you something. I'm not a Tea Party, and I'm not a conservative, but that doesn't matter. Equal protection under the law means equal protection under the law. And you know, the stupidity of the politicians, and it shows you how twisted their brains are, many of them, they think they're going to be in power forever. So they do all kinds of stuff to their political opponents as though the worm won't turn at some point and they're going to wind up on the outside. This quest for power is sociopathic. You know, people have asked me on many occasions why I don't run for Congress, and my answer is no, thank you. I run from Congress. I work with some really wonderful people on the Hill. They're really my heroes. My good friend Lou Barletta, and I consider him a personal friend. When Lou was the mayor of Hazleton, Pennsylvania, he got sued. Why did he get sued? Because a Dominican drug gang had set up shop in this town, and this quiet town in the hills of Pennsylvania, it's such a beautiful town. It had been a coal mining town originally. And it's just so picturesque. Peaceful, quiet. He grew up in that town. These Dominican gangsters moved in, and suddenly there were shootings. People were being killed. One guy walked up to one of these thugs and said, you know, I grew up in that playground. My kids play in that playground. I know you're selling drugs. Please take your stuff. Go someplace else. This is going to get somebody hurt. I don't want this in my town. I don't want my children to be subjected to this. You know what the thug's answer was? He shot the guy in the face in front of witnesses. Killed him right on the spot. So Barletta went to the Bush administration, and of course, because he's a conservative Republican, they sprang into action, and they handed Lou a mug with a badge on it and said, you're on your own, Mayor, have a nice life. See, it's not about left or right, folks. It's about right or wrong, and both parties suck. They're both wrong, and they both don't give a rat's tail about Americans. They care about the people that will send them the money. So if you don't have a big, fat checkbook, they don't want to know about you. You are a speed bump. You're an impediment to them. Is this the land of Lincoln, a country of the people, by the people, and for the people? I don't think so. So Barletta enacted his own immigration ordinances, which largely paralleled federal immigration law, thinking that he wanted to create an environment that was hostile not to immigrants but criminal aliens, illegal aliens. Of course, he got sued, and I was his final witness at the trial, and that's how I know Lou Barletta. He then successfully ran and became the member of Congress that represents that town in Washington. But I'm going to let you in on a little secret about people like Lou Barletta and Steve King, and both of them have told me this in private conversations. As I say, I consider them friends. Truly friends. And they said to me, when I vote on issues, Steve told me this and Lou told me this, when I vote on issues, of course, I have to give priority in my thinking to the people who are my constituents, but I try my damnedest, both told me this, to cast votes that are in the best interests of all American citizens. And I'll let you in on a secret. I've had occasion when Lou has reached out to me when there have been pending immigration bills. Either he or his staff members or both would call me up and ask me my advice. And I'm not doing this to dislocate my shoulder. I think Lou would tell you that I know a little bit more about immigration than Lou does, not because I'm smarter than him. He's a very smart guy. But this has been my life's work. I've been involved with immigration for almost 43 years. It's scary for me to think about it. But this coming October, it will be 43 years since I got my immigration badge, and I spent 30 years on the job. So he understands that I have a different perspective from the average bear. That's why I do expert witness testimony at trials and before congressional hearings. And it's not easy to be declared an expert. You have to have more than just a badge for a bunch of years. It's about diversity of experience, and it's a pretty rigorous process. And every time you testify at a trial, you get vetted all over again to prove that you truly are a subject matter expert. So Lou has confidence that my perspectives, based on all those years of experience, are worth considering. And it doesn't mean he's always going to agree with me or do what I suggest, but the fact that he's willing to reach out to me, and he has great staff members. You know, his chief of staff is an amazing young lady. All of his people, they're just a bunch of terrific people. And Lou said to me, I'm blessed. He said, I have a great bunch of people. But he said, at the end of the day, my constituents voted for me, not my staff. I bear the responsibility. I have to do the homework. And he said, Mike, when I need to, I'm going to ask you for advice and just to understand how you see things. And I'm sure he does it on other issues. And I'm sure there are other politicians in Washington who do something like that. And those are the good guys. They need our support. And we need to stop voting a party line. And we need to stop this nonsense of saying, well, this guy is a good guy or a bad guy, depending on what party they're affiliated with. What party they're affiliated with means nothing to me, because both parties rot. They're not the friend of the average American. They are the power brokers. That's bad. That's not what the founding fathers had in mind. You cannot be a slave to two masters. It's difficult for a politician to stand up and defy his party to satisfy his constituents. So I single out people like Steve King and Lou Barletta and Jeff Sessions and Chuck Grassley, and there's a few others, Senator Vitter, because I know that they vote what's in the best interest of the people who sent them to Washington. What a novel thought. There's elections coming up. We need to pay attention. The fact that John Boehner, and that's really what I call him, I don't call him Boehner, the fact that those people still don't get it, even after Cantor was knocked out of the box by an upstart by the name of Bratt. David Bratt went against Cantor. Cantor wanted to provide illegal aliens with an opportunity to join the military and get a green card. Why on God's green earth would you want to give an illegal alien military training if we can't verify who they are? If you go to page 68 of the 9/11 Commission report, the actual Commission report, it talks about a guy by the name of Ali Mohammed. Ali Mohammed immigrated legally to the United States in the late 1980s from Egypt. He'd been an Egyptian army officer. We put him in our own military. He became an instructor with special forces at Fort Bragg. Ali Mohammed, according to reports, was the guy who trained the 93 bombers at the Trade Center. We trained Los Zetas in Mexico. Los Zetas were the premier, the best of the best, the cream of the crop among Mexican law enforcement and military officials. They became the most pernicious and violent of all the drug cartels. Why in the world would you give illegal aliens firearms and firearms training? And by the way, under our laws, it's a felony for an illegal alien to possess not only a firearm, but just ammunition is a felony. So we're going to give illegal aliens weapons training? Are you serious? Cantor favored that. A congressman by the name of Denham favored that. When I tried to speak to one of Denham's people, I got nowhere. Some girl swapped three emails with me back and forth, wouldn't even deign to get on the phone with me, and she was hardly anybody high up in the food chain. She was a little goldfish in a little bowl. And when I said I need to speak to his legislative assistant or I need to speak to his counsel, it was like, what, are you kidding? And she started telling me about all these countries that send their military to work with our military. And I said, yes, that's very different from making people members of our own armed forces without properly screening them. And she gave me some real smug, quick, dumb-witted answer. And I said to her, can I quote you the next time I'm on TV? In fact, next week, folks, I may well be on with Neil Cavuto, and Neil's one of my favorite broadcasters. And I said, next time I'm on with Cavuto or maybe Megyn Kelly or whomever, would it be okay if I quote you? Well, I can't speak for the congressman. I said, fine. Can you put me in touch with somebody who can? I never got an answer. So either Denham is being run around the nose by his little 25-year-old staffers, or Denham doesn't give a damn. But either way, we'll never know because you can't seem to reach the guy and get him to be made accountable for wanting to endanger national security. Small price to pay, I guess, when you have a political agenda in mind. Or maybe campaign contributors who want you to go in a different direction because they're so focused that they don't care about the future of America either. They just care how much money they can make by exploiting cheap labor, and the hell with Americans. We are not being represented by this Congress. We are absolutely not being represented by the occupant of the Oval Office. It's been a long time coming. We've been trending in this direction for a very long time. And I know there are conservatives who love Ronald Reagan, and I couldn't stand the guy, to be honest with you. because his deregulation did a lot of damage. We need to get rid of foolish regulation. And he's right. He was right. But we can't get rid of all regulation. And I want to see corporations profitable, but I want to see America secure. I want to see Americans have a secure future in their own country. And boy, oh boy, you'd have to go back decades to find presidents who seemed to care about that. I would say maybe Kennedy or Eisenhower. Eisenhower was one of my all-time favorite presidents, you know, and he was a Republican. I'm a Democrat. This is much bigger than the parties. It's about what do you stand for? Who is your priority? Is it your campaign contributor, or is it the people who sent you to Washington? We have a lot of soldiers who've died for this country and a lot more who've come back badly injured, physically, emotionally, or both. We could say the same thing about first responders and law enforcement. Law enforcement officers are no less valiant or committed to this country than our members of the armed forces. And they go in harm's way every morning, every night, to protect the public, to enforce our laws, laws that our politicians show nothing but contempt for. It has to stop. See, I think one thing should be clear to everybody. Well, Truman said the buck stops here, meaning that as the president, he was top dog. In a manner of speaking, the buck stops with us because we sent those people there. If those people weren't there, then what we're witnessing would not be carried out by them, maybe by a different bunch of characters. But if you go to root cause, it's who we send to Washington. We the people. Citizen is the highest rank in this government. You'd never know it to listen to these politicians bully us around or try to. It's time we push back. It's time that we stop looking at Americans of the opposing political party as our enemy. They're our allies. It's about persuading them and having those conversations. It's about celebrating the First Amendment. You know, maybe for the 4th of July weekend, when we think about the American Revolution and how America came to be to create this great experiment in democracy, maybe we should seize the opportunity to have a good old-fashioned debate with the people we disagree with. What an amazing way to celebrate America's independence, celebrate our First Amendment, have that conversation. We all grew up being taught that we should never discuss politics or religion in public. I agree about religion. The relationship we have with God or whether or not we have that relationship is about as personal and private as it gets, and that doesn't need to be aired. That's something that we do in our own hearts. But government, you know, when enemy rebels take over a country, when there's a coup d'etat, one of the first things they do is to seize the radio stations and to seize the television stations, to control the information being given to the public. That's why I do this radio program. There's no money in this, but there's a little bit of satisfaction. I can't tell you how important it is for me that you folks spend that hour with me, whether it's on Fridays if you're listening to the program live, or whether you're listening to a podcast of my show after the fact. Having witnessed 9/11 up close and in person, smelling the stench in the air of that cauldron at Ground Zero that in part became a crematorium for our fellow neighbors, to see my distraught neighbors wandering the neighborhood for I don't know how long, crying, sitting on the sidewalk, lighting candles, painting murals on handball court walls and buildings with the American flag and the eagles and badges and crosses and Stars of David and prayers in response to this disaster that could have been prevented if the lessons of the 93 attacks had been learned. We are in an even more perilous situation, a more precarious situation right now, folks. My mission, and I have decided to accept it, has been to provide my perspectives, and you may not agree with everything I say, and that doesn't make you my opponent. It just makes you a fellow American. Fellow American, I don't care what your political party is. I don't care if you belong to the Hopping Kangaroo Party. What I care about is that you seek the truth, that you seek to educate yourself, and that you be a participant in this democratic republic of ours, that the politicians come to understand that, no, we're not as stupid as they had hoped we are, and we're not going to go quietly into the night either. That's what this program is about, and that's what I've been doing ever since those horrific attacks on September 11, 2001. I thank you for spending Friday evening with me. I hope that this program is helpful to you in sorting out the nonsense so that we can go and approach those people running for office this coming November. We really need to get our voices heard now more than ever. We are living in a very dangerous era. And this is the work that Americans must do. Our country depends on it. We depend on it, our children, their children. This is the time for Americans to roll up their sleeves and get to work. Remember, folks, democracy is not a spectator sport. Look forward to seeing you again next week, same time, on the Michael Cutler Hour. Have a great weekend, everybody. So long.